MacCast, Sunday, November 8th, 2020. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Hope you are having a wonderful day, wonderful week, wonderful weekend, whenever you're listening to this podcast. I am glad to be back here with you for another episode of Apple and Mac news and goings-on and things and all that fun stuff that we do here in the MacCast community, talking about Apple's products. And this is a great week because coming up we have another Apple event. Of course, we're going to get into that in this episode. We'll talk about what we expect, when it's happening, and all of the details. We also have had Apple's fourth quarter financials results call happen. That happened back on October 29th. So we'll get into that. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of some of Apple's numbers and how they are doing. We're also going to talk about teardowns of iPhones. We're going to talk about potential new products. We are going to get into some of the Apple TV Plus news, including some James Bond stuff, which is great, and talk about, again, some new technologies that might be coming to future Apple products. So we've got a lot of good things to talk about in the news this week, and then we're going to get to some of your feedback and questions. We have a listener who needs some help with his photo library. We're going to talk about 5G and how it might be a little confusing on your iPhone. We've got a listener who needs some help with complications on his Apple Watch, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And I also had a listener who needed some help with the health app, and we'll get into that. And then we'll talk a little bit about Apple One and plans and things like that, because people have had questions now that that is out and available. So lots of great things to jump into in this episode. I want to just dive right into it, starting with Apple's fourth quarter financials earnings call. That happened on October 29th, so you may have heard some of this news already, but the company announced a revenue of $64.7 billion and a net profit of $12.67 billion for the quarter. It was roughly equal in terms of the revenue to what they earned in the same quarter last year. $64 billion last year, $64.7 billion. This year, net profit was down a bit. They earned $13.69 billion last year, so down about $1 billion, but roughly even. And, you know, the fourth quarter this year was a little bit slower for Apple. I think the numbers were obviously impacted by the late rollout of the iPhone 12s this year. Usually Apple has some of that iPhone revenue in this quarterly results call, but the way release worked out this year, especially with the Pro and the Mini coming out in November, they just rolled out a couple days ago, actually, on pre-order. I know a number of you have picked those up and are very excited about those models of iPhone. I think it's overall going to do very well, but we're not going to see those numbers until the first quarter of 2021. So how did Apple do with the iPhones? Well, not too bad. They sold 26.44 billion dollars worth of iPhones in the quarter, although that was down 20% from the 33.36 billion they sold last year. So again, that late rollout impacting those numbers just a bit. All other categories, though, for Apple were up, and Apple actually had record quarterly numbers for Macs and services. Services doing very well, $14.55 billion on services revenue, up 16% year over year. Mac revenue was amazing, $9.03 billion worth of Mac revenue brought in for the quarter, up 29%. iPad and Mac sales are doing very well in the current situation. A lot of people working from home, students at home, so Apple selling quite a few Macs and iPads. Wearables also, as you might imagine, did very well. Of course, Apple has the new Apple Watch Series 6 out, so that definitely helped in those numbers. I think $7.88 billion in wearables, home, and accessories revenue up 21% year over year. And the iPad, believe it or not, the big winner for the quarter, $6.79 billion worth of iPads. I think it helps that Apple had a bunch of new iPad models out, up 46% year over year. So overall, the numbers looking pretty good. A few other highlights to talk about. Apple now has 585 million paid subscribers across all of their services. That was up from just 135 million paid subscribers a year ago. So doing very, very well on the services front. I have to imagine that the new Apple One service plans are also going to help boost those numbers rolling forward. Apple is struggling a little bit, though, in the supply chain, and Tim Cook did comment on that a little bit. He was asked in the quarterly results call about it, and it was mainly to do with the back orders for iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pro models, but also iPads, Apple Watch, even Macs being impacted by the supply chain and the current global situation with the pandemic, all impacting on that. And he simply said that Apple's working really, really hard to resolve these issues. Of course, they don't like having supply and component issues, especially when they've got great demand going right now. I know a lot of you in the community are wanting to pick up a new iPhone or an iPhone 12 Pro or an iPhone 12 mini, and they are backordered into December, as far as I know, in most cases. And I think you can get some shipping in late November, but those dates are rolling further and further back. And we're hearing about component shortages, specifically with the power management chips. That's impacting that. Also, maybe the LiDAR components in the Pro models. So Apple trying to work out the supply chain issues, and if they can get that loosened up, that will help with those numbers coming up in the first quarter next year. But overall, I would say a pretty good quarter. They kind of hit analyst estimates. I don't think it was a breakthrough quarter. It wasn't, you know, smashing a ton of records. Of course, they broke through in a couple areas, but overall, doing okay. And I think the fourth quarter, the first quarter 2021 is going to likely be amazing. Those numbers are going to be huge. I think iPhone 12, very popular. And like I said at the top of the show, we still have maybe some new Macs coming. And actually, let's talk about that now, because Apple did announce their One More Thing event, I think appropriately named this year, a little homage maybe to Steve Jobs, but the event will take place on November 10th at 10 a.m., so that's this coming Tuesday as I record this podcast. You may already have heard the announcements by the time you hear this episode. It is expected to be a Mac-focused event, likely with the announcement of Apple's first Silicon Macs. And we're also probably expecting them to release the details of Mac OS Big Sur. There could be a few other things sprinkled in there, although I think those are pretty big edge cases at this point. The big question that's up for debate right now seems to be which Macs are going to be the first Apple Silicon Macs. The front contenders seem to be the 13-inch MacBook Pro and the 13-inch MacBook Air. The 13-inch MacBook Pro, they're saying, would likely ship before the end of the year, but the Air might not arrive until earlier next year. This is according to analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. Bloomberg also chimed in a little bit later and said that they thought the 16-inch MacBook Pro was also ramping up production, or they were hearing that at least, but then later hedged their bets, saying that the 13-inch models are further along in production, that they think those two will be released or announced, rather, at this event, and that the 16-inch MacBook Pro could come along later. I'm not feeling like Apple's going to talk about the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Maybe I'm giving it a 50-50 chance, but I really think this is going to be focused on those two 13-inch models. The chip powering the new Macs is expected to be a version of the 5-nanometer A14 chip that Apple has in the current iPads and iPhones, possibly with the moniker A14T. I'm not really sure what the T stands for, but that seems to be what the rumor mill is saying Apple will call it at this point. It is going to be a mixture of CPU and GPU, just like the A14 that we find in our iPhones and iPads, but we don't know how many cores and specs and all that sort of stuff. We will find all of that out, I think, on Tuesday. Further on, of course, Apple is expected to follow up with more Apple Silicon Macs in 2021, including iMacs, the possible return of a 12-inch MacBook, which I think a lot of people would be very excited about, and then that 14-inch MacBook Pro that we'd been hearing about all last year, along with probably that 16.1-inch MacBook Pro that I do think will come out probably in 2021 and not be announced at this One More Thing event. Both the 14.1-inch MacBook Pro and the 16.1-inch MacBook Pro Apple Silicon editions that would come out in 2021 are also expected to adopt the new mini LED screens that we've been hearing about. So those will probably pick up that technology as well. Right now, early indications seem to show that Apple is expecting their Apple Silicon Macs to be very well received. They are ramping up production, according to Nikkei. They say Apple is hoping to produce 2.5 million Apple Silicon-based Macs by February 2021. That's the equivalent of about 20% of all the Macs that Apple shipped in 2019. So expecting demand to be pretty high. And I just know general buzz in the community, hearing from the folks in the MacCast community, a lot of people asking questions, you know, should I hold off? Should I wait? What's coming out? What's not coming out? I'm getting a lot of questions about that. And that usually means, at least in my mind, that there's a lot of pent-up demand for these units. They're probably going to be very well performing. I have to say, though, I would be a little bit hesitant unless you're just really, really into it. I think as smooth as Apple's going to try to make the transition with some of the technologies that they're bringing in, the ability to do Rosetta, the ability to run your Intel apps on your Apple Silicon Macs, and also vice versa, you know, getting all that back and forth support. I think Apple's going to do a pretty good job with that implementation, but still, it's emulation in a lot of ways, and it's going to take a while for a lot of the software to be ramped up to run natively on those Macs. So there's always that transition period. Being an early adopter can be a little bit rough, especially if you rely on those machines for production work. So I know I'm not discouraging anyone, but I'm just trying to be realistic about the transition. If you think back and remember how this went with Apple moving from the IBM processors, the PowerPC, to the Intel, it wasn't too bad back in the day, but there were hiccups along the road. So, Apple will try to address those as best as possible. I think they will do a good job, but, you got to be in that camp of wanting to be a really early adopter of this technology. And we'll have to see how it goes. But I mean, given how much experience Apple has had with iOS and the A series processors, I think it's going to be a pretty good transition. So we'll just have to wait and see. Super excited about the One More Thing event. Of course, we'll be following up with additional coverage after the event. I'll give you my thoughts and opinions on everything Apple announces on a future episode of the MacCast. I'll also be looking forward to hearing from you about your thoughts and opinions. So after the event, please feel free to chime in. Hit me up on social media, Twitter. Also, you can send in your audio comments and emails to maccast@gmail.com. Of course, you probably know that the iPhone 12s are out and now shipping. Both the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro have been out for a couple weeks now. Apple just started pre-orders of the iPhone 12 Pro Max and the iPhone 12 Mini. Of course, iFixit did their thing and they tore down the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro. And it turns out these two devices, hey, they're twinsies. They're almost identical in nearly every way. As a matter of fact, you can take the display off of the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro, look at the innards, and you might have a hard time telling the difference between them. without flipping it over to look at the color, I guess, on the back, especially if it is the new blue models. But internally, they're almost identical according to the iFixit teardown. Not only that, just like Travolta and Cage, you can swap their faces. Yeah, it's a whole face-off sort of thing. The displays are compatible between the two devices. Of course, display differences, though. The iPhone 12 Pro does have a couple hundred more nits of brightness in the specs. But beyond that, totally swappable back and forth. Of course, the iPhone 12 is missing the LiDAR and telephoto lens. In the iPhone 12, I guess there's just some plastic spacers or placeholders that take up that space. And then the batteries are also exactly the same, they found out. 2,815 milliamp hours, and those are also interchangeable. So Apple likely saving a lot of money in terms of tooling and manufacturing with the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro. Makes you wonder if that's also why they were able to get these models out a little bit earlier than the iPhone 12 Pro Max and the iPhone 12 Mini, which are really, you know, in a lot of ways, new form factors. And with the iPhone 12 Pro Max, of course, they've got some new camera technologies and other things in there. So they're going to be a little bit different, probably, than the previous models. But very, very interesting to see a set of iPhones that are very, very similar in almost every way, other than, you know, a few little components. And that's got to be great for Apple, again, in terms of the manufacturing. So that's cool. If you want to go see the teardown, it is up and available over at ifixit.com. Apple is also planning, apparently, to launch some new AirPods and AirPod Pros in the first half of 2021, at least according to Bloomberg. The third generation AirPods are said to be taking on a design similar to the AirPod Pros with those smaller stems. They would not have some of the higher-end features, though, like the noise cancellation. We've also kind of seen some rumored images of them, and they would stick with the kind of more squarish case, not the longer, wider case of the AirPods Pro. I also don't think they're getting the silicon ear tips. It didn't look like it to me. They kind of retain the more traditional AirPod design. Apple is reportedly looking, though, to improve the battery life on both the AirPods and the AirPod Pros. For the AirPod Pros update, they say that Apple is looking at a completely in-ear design, maybe without any stems at all, although they do note that that's proving to be a little bit challenging, fitting all those components in there, including things like the antenna and the microphones. It'd be curious to see, too, how they handle the technology, because I think a big benefit and advantage of the current AirPods with the stem is that beam-forming microphone. They sound really great when you're talking to someone on the phone, so I don't know how they maintain that level of technology, but Apple's pretty good at this stuff. They've got some great audio engineers, so maybe they have some tricks up their sleeve to do an all-in-ear AirPod Pro. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I've kind of gotten used to the stems. I don't know if I want just a little earpiece that goes in my ear, but I guess they're a little more discreet, maybe a little bit more stylish. That is something that people care about. So what do you think? You know, would you like an AirPod Pro that doesn't have a stem, or do you prefer the stems? I just think that it probably will have better mic audio quality with something like the stems. But they are reporting that both models are expected to have a new wireless chip, so Apple always looking to improve that. Of course, their chip engineering prowess is great, and I'm sure they'll have a fancy new marketing name or moniker for that new chip. The report also mentions the possibility, and this is very interesting considering Apple just announced a new mini HomePod, that they might have a mid-range HomePod in the works. So you'll have a little HomePod family, a mini, a regular HomePod, or maybe, I don't, what would you call the middle one? They don't talk about this in any of the reports, because the big one right now is called the HomePod, but if Apple wanted to stick with sort of the iPhone naming, it would be HomePod Mini, HomePod, and then I guess you would maybe rebrand the full-size HomePod, the HomePod Max. I don't know. You know, what do you call the you can't just say HomePod middle, right? That's not, you see why I'm not in a marketing department, but I don't even really know. We'll have to wait and find out. But what do you think about a mid-range HomePod? So I would imagine you have a $99 HomePod and then a maybe $199 and a $299. I guess a whole price point thing going on there. That would make a full lineup and maybe help bump up the HomePod market. I don't know. I did end up ordering a HomePod Mini, so I will be sharing my thoughts and opinions on that device in a future episode of MacCast. I think it's coming toward the end of November, so got a little bit of wait on that. I didn't jump in on day one, so I don't think I got the earliest possible release for the HomePod Mini. I wasn't sure I was going to pick one up, and I just sort of decided last minute, yep, I'm going to go for it and check it out. So I'd love to get your opinions on the HomePod now that they're out too. And also, if anybody's picked up a new iPhone, I forgot to mention this a little bit earlier, especially an iPhone 12 Pro Max or an iPhone 12 Mini, I'd love to hear from you on those devices. What are you thinking about them? Are you enjoying them? I think I would really enjoy the smaller size of the iPhone Mini. I just wish they had offered an iPhone 12 Mini Pro, and I would have jumped at the chance for that device. Jumping back into the AirPod rumors, the same report from Bloomberg also offered an update on the delayed AirPod Studio headphones. We were hearing heavy rumors leading into this event season that Apple was going to have these AirPod Studios ready to go. We even reportedly saw some leaked images of what they would look like. They kind of have this retro design. They were supposed to have interchangeable parts in terms of the headband and the ear cups. The report is claiming that Apple has just had a lot of development challenges with the high-end over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones, and they say they had to scale back on some of the functionality, including that replaceable headband. They do think there's still going to be the replaceable ear cups, and those might be in there, but yeah, Apple having to scale back a little bit. Now, there is some hope that Apple might still announce the AirPod Studios at the upcoming event on Tuesday. But like I said earlier, I think it's going to be mainly a Mac-focused event. You know, we're also hearing folks still holding out for AirTags being something that Apple talks about, and also a Apple TV update. I guess, you know, in the back of my mind, they could do that, but again, I don't think they have those products up their sleeve yet. So I'm expecting that we get a whole range of AirPods at a single event sometime probably in early 2021. Again, just pure speculation on my part, but in the first half, why not just do an event that's all AirPods, maybe throw the AirTags in there, kind of a whole Apple accessories event, which would be a new thing and I think very, very interesting. They could do that in the first half of the year and just make that a big thing. So I think that would be totally fine, especially if these products aren't really ready to go. If they're struggling with it, I see no point in sort of rushing the release. They ran into this problem before, right, when they tried to do the Air Power Mat. It didn't work out very well for them. So, hey, if they're not ready, let's not talk about them. Let's make sure they're ready to go, consumer ready, before we make any kind of announcement. So I hope that's how Apple rolls it out. Last thing, kind of on the AirPods front this week, Apple did announce a new service program for the existing AirPods Pro. Apparently, some units made before October 2020 might be having some issues. So if your AirPods are crackling or making static sounds that increase in loud environments, especially when you're exercising or while you're talking on the phone, that's one of the symptoms of a potential issue. And also, if the active noise cancellation is not working as you would expect, so you're getting a loss of bass sound or an increase in background sounds such as street or airplane noise, you're going to want to take your AirPods into an Apple store, probably contact Apple, make an appointment at the Genius Bar, or bring them into an Apple authorized service provider, and they will offer you a replacement. So again, these are on, I guess, some units manufactured before October 2020 that seem to be having issues. So I guess that's going to be a lot of AirPods at this point. Mine fall in that category, although I have not noticed or had any of the issues that are described in this service program. But if you have experienced those, again, contact Apple and they can likely hook you up with a replacement. Apple has basically said no to the high price being asked for the latest James Bond film. If you may remember, we talked about this a little bit. MGM was mulling over possibly selling the rights to the latest James Bond film into streaming, since it was continually having to delay the release into theaters because of the pandemic. They kept hoping theaters were going to be opening up. Reportedly, both Apple and Netflix were interested in the latest James Bond film, No Time to Die, although neither company was willing to pay the $600 million or reported $600 million price tag that the studio wanted. And that price tag was just for a one-year deal. The Hollywood Reporter cited sources claiming that Apple actually had been the only one of the two to actually make an offer. They were willing to go reportedly into the $350 to $400 million range. So I would say Apple was stepping up, but that was not enough to buy the rights to the film. MGM has held on to it and currently pushed the theatrical release date back to April 2021. That's actually a full year from the original release date. I think it was supposed to come out in April of 2020. To put things into perspective, you know, Apple was able to pick up the Tom Hanks film Greyhound for a 10-year exclusivity deal for around $70 million. So huge, huge difference. Now, I know James Bond, a massive property. Of course, it's got a lot of high value. But, you know, I don't know, $600 million, they're going to have a hard time getting that, I think, at the box office with the current situation. Even if things were to open up, I think there's going to be a lot of hesitation for people going back really quickly back to the theaters. I don't know. I love watching movies in the theaters. I'd love to be going back, but it doesn't feel like that's the direction we're moving in. And it's kind of crazy to me, this amount. And Apple, again, really did step up with a $400 million offer, if that's what they did make. You know, that's a little bit crazy. And Apple does have a bunch of other big, large movie deals in the work. I mean, they definitely are spending some money on some quality content for Apple TV Plus. They have a $200 million deal reportedly for Martin Scorsese's next film project. And they have the film Emancipation in the work, which is a Will Smith project, and that's estimated at around $120 million. So Apple paying for that as well. And they continue to kind of make some really great deals. As a matter of fact, we just heard this week that Apple TV Plus has announced a new deal with Sony Pictures for a comedy series called Platonic. It's a 10-episode series that will star Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen. It will be directed by Nick Stroller, who worked with Byrne and Rogen on the Neighbors films. This is set to release in late 2021 or early 2020 on Apple TV Plus. Also, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Apple has done a deal with comedian Jon Stewart, bringing his return back to Apple TV after retiring in 2015. He's going to do a new news show for Apple TV Plus. He and his busboy production company made a deal for a series which will focus on a single news topic covered over an hour-long episode. This is not going to be your typical series, though. Each episode is going to be released periodically, more like the Oprah Conversation series. So it's not going to be like a season where it's an episode a week, something like that. They're going to come out, just one at a time. And the series is also going to offer a companion podcast. So this is something we've been hearing Apple was going to be doing with Apple TV Plus content, that they're going to do the TV series or TV show and also come out with some companion podcast content to kind of drive that and have the crossover. So this is going to be one example of that. In addition, Apple has also worked out a first look deal with Jon Stewart and his production company for other projects. So that's that's another thing that Apple has been very heavily actively pursuing. You've probably noticed when they're doing these deals. So they have first right of refusal at a lot of this content. And, you know, I really do think that a lot of people underestimated Apple and Apple TV Plus early on. And I think they are grabbing a lot of really great content. I know I've talked about this on the show, and I don't mean to sound like, you know, I'm overly excited about Apple TV Plus, because I definitely wasn't. I was very hesitant about it. But I think their whole quality over quantity is really showing, and I think people are starting to respond to it. I really feel like Ted Lasso got some really great buzz and has been the really first breakout example. But a lot of the other content, and we've talked about all this a lot in our community, and I've heard from a lot of you echoing the same thing, is that, you know, a lot of these shows are really, really great. And I still have some that I want to get into. So, you know, Servant is one that I haven't dove into yet. I've heard a lot of great things about the new Sofia Coppola movie with Bill Murray. I'm looking forward to watching that. So a lot of great content still coming out on Apple TV Plus. And again, Apple continues to do some great deals. Another series that I'm excited about, they just announced this week that Christopher Walken is going to be joining the cast of the Apple TV Plus workplace thriller called Severance. This series is created by Dan Erickson. It's going to be produced by Ben Stiller and also stars Patricia Arquette and Adam Scott. It's produced by the same company behind the Apple TV Plus shows C and Truth Be Told. Actually, Truth Be Told is another one that I haven't delved into yet. That production company is called Endeavor Content. And I am very excited about this next announcement. Ted Lasso has been renewed for a third season. We already knew we were getting a second season. I absolutely can't wait for that to be released. Can't bring it soon enough, although the first season just ended. So I think we've got a whole year wait at least on that one. But they're going to have a third season, so that's awesome. And yeah, so I'm super excited about Apple TV. If you can't tell, a lot of great content still to come. And then last thing kind of in Apple entertainment news this week is that Bloomberg is saying that Apple might be interested in acquiring the podcast network Wondery. According to sources, Wondery is looking to sell for around $300 to $400 million. I'm looking at that number and going, wait a minute, isn't that the price that Apple offered for the James Bond film? Yeah, it actually is. The idea that, you know, podcast networks are now worth $300 to $400 million, I think that's great. Having been in podcasting since the very, very early days and beginnings, I think that sort of legitimizes the podcast format and platform. But it's also kind of a little bit crazy to me because I'm nervous about the siloing up of podcasts, right? I think the great thing about podcasts is that they're open and available to everybody across whatever platforms and networks they want. And we're seeing with Spotify and some of these other companies, this sort of siloing of the content. And I'm not so sure that that's really great for the entire industry moving forward. So I'm tentative about it, but it's looking like Apple wants to pick up some podcast networks and content, so again, they can start building shows to support some of their other initiatives and efforts. And maybe this is their path to get there. So not official. It's just sort of talks going on, apparently, between Apple and Wondery, and we'll have to wait and see if anything comes of that. The Financial Times is reporting that Apple has stepped up its efforts to develop and build their own search engine. This is something we've been hearing about for a while, that Apple has been sort of secretly operating in the background to possibly move away from Google as the default search engine in a lot of their devices and products. As a matter of fact, in iOS 14, when you do a search from the home screen, Apple displays its own Siri suggestions and today's search results with links directly to websites and through their own own search engine. So they're not using Google everywhere anymore. They are kind of building on top of some of their own technologies. And as evidence in the Financial Times report, they do cite a few things that have been going on, including Apple's hiring 2 years ago of John Gianandrea, who is the former Google head of search. So he was brought on board. A lot of folks believed to kind of help beef up and really help out with the Siri technology, although again, it all maybe goes back into Apple trying to build this search engine. We've also seen frequent job listings going up on Apple's job boards for search engineers. And in this Financial Times piece, they say that Apple's crawler, web crawler, the Apple bot, has been increasing in activity. So they're crawling more sites, gathering more content. And then finally, Apple's deal with Google is coming to an end, or at least up for renewal. And with all the concerns over antitrust investigations with tech companies like Apple and Google that are going on, Apple is maybe a little bit hesitant to continue the deal with Google because it might look a little bit anti-competitive. So it's all interesting things to think about, but I also think about at the end of the day how much money Apple makes from their deal with Google. And I think I talked about this a little bit either in the last episode or the episode before that, because I don't know how you can give up what is reportedly a $8 to $12 billion a year deal. Yeah, that's how much Google reportedly pays Apple to be the default search engine in their products, in macOS and in iOS. So it's not a small amount of change, and I can't imagine that Apple moving to their own search engine and dumping Google would really help Google and Apple's relationship, which is always a little bit tentative, right? They're kind of frenemies in a lot of ways. They get together on a lot of things, but they also compete on a lot of things. So it'll be very, very interesting. But what do you think about the idea of Apple doing their own search engine? You know, I think this feels in a lot of ways like what it felt like when we heard that Apple was going to do their own mapping solution, right? I think it's a long, arduous trend up. Like, I don't think it's very easy. It's definitely not going to be very easy to catch up to Google with their search engine. But if anybody can do it, it's probably Apple. But it's going to take many, many years. I don't think it's going to be an overnight thing. So the idea that Apple has been working on this for a few years in the background makes a lot of sense. I would think that they would want to continue for a couple more years, because like Apple Maps, I'm guessing even with Apple's talents, you're talking about a 5 to 7, 8 year ramp up to kind of really get to any kind of level that's going to be even close to where Google's at with search. So it's interesting. It also brings up an interesting dilemma about privacy and security and Apple's whole marketing mission and objectives there. I guess without having to make money off of a search engine, maybe they can do it a little bit differently. But, you know, ad revenue is really how search engines work these days. But maybe Apple has a different idea or a different thought or a different approach to it. You know, they can maybe take the money from their products and reinvest that in the search stuff. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on, you know, Apple doing their own search engine. And then last thing to talk about in the news for this week, mini LEDs. Been talking about these for a while, mini LED displays. We're hearing, at least from ET News out of Korea, that the first product may be a new iPad Pro coming out next year. They report that Apple's first device with a mini LED display will launch in the first quarter of 2021, and it will be an updated iPad Pro. LG is expected to be supplying the displays. Mini LED technology, of course, offers similar brightness, contrast ratios, and energy performance to OLED displays, but without the potential downsides of things like burn-in. So Apple has been exploring this technology for a while. We've been expecting them to come out with a product sometime soon. I think a new iPad Pro update makes a lot of sense, and the timing feels right. In the same report, they also claim that Apple has plans to use mini LED displays in future MacBooks and IMAX. And mini LED is not to be confused with micro LED, which is another more advanced technology that's several years off. So the mini LED is more of a backlighting technology, and it is expected to be coming very, very soon. So hopefully sometime in 2021, we'll see the first mini LED displays in Apple products. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Linode. Look, whether you're working on a personal project or managing an enterprise infrastructure, you deserve simple, affordable, and accessible cloud computing solutions that allow you to take your project to the next level. You can simplify your cloud infrastructure with Linode's Linux virtual machines and develop, deploy, and scale your modern applications faster and easier. I love Linode. I've actually been using it to help me with my web development, which is the other thing that I do outside of the MacCast. I love it because I can easily spin up servers and environments. I can use my Linodes to build out and test my projects. I can host my projects on there. I can have my own Git servers. It is amazing. And whatever you choose to do with your Linode, it's totally up to you. That's what's awesome about Linode, is it's completely flexible. You want to build a gaming server to host Minecraft or Terraria? You can totally do it on your Linode. You want to build your own VPN? You got it. Need a Git server, WordPress? It could be anything. Any kind of server you need, they can handle it, and their cloud manager makes the setup and management of your servers a breeze. Best of all, you can get started on Linode today with a $100 free credit for listeners of the MacCast. You can find all the details at linode.com/MacCast. And Linode has 11 global data centers. They provide 24/7, 365 human support with no tiers or handoffs, regardless of your plan size. And in addition to shared and dedicated compute instances, you can also use that $100 credit on S3 compatible storage, managed Kubernetes, and even more. Just visit linode.com/MacCast and click on the free account button to get started. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the MacCast. Robert emailed me this week, and he's a little confounded with the complication of the calendar on his Apple Watch and the clutter that it is bringing. He says he's looking for a calendar app that has a less complicated complication. Yeah, he's like me. He uses both Fantastical and the modular face for his Apple Watch. And the issue is that both the Apple Calendar app and the Fantastical app, in their complication, when you have a calendar day where you have no events going on, basically it's clear, right? You don't have anything scheduled for that day, because normally the way the complication works is if you have an upcoming event or something's going on, it shows that to you within the complication in the Apple Watch. And then after that time passes, right, and then it'll go to the next event and the next event. So very, very handy. You can glance down at your Apple Watch. You can see what's going on. But what happens when there's no upcoming events for that day? Well, it still displays a message in that complication area. In the case of Fantastical, it says, no events, enjoy your day. And that is bugging Robert quite a bit. So he emailed me and said, you know, is there a calendar app that falls back to just not display anything if I don't have anything going on? He doesn't want the clutter on his Apple Watch when he's looking down at the screen. And I can totally get that. I can understand that. It doesn't really bother me, the no events, enjoy your day thing personally, but I can totally understand how that could bug some people, right? If you don't have anything going on, you don't need to be told that you don't have anything going on. I completely get his point. So he wrote in to ask the community, one, if any of us know of a calendar app that has a complication that will just display as blank when you don't have any upcoming events. That's what he would prefer. I was unable to help him. I couldn't think of one. He's tried out a bunch of different ones. I think he set up to maybe 10 calendar apps, if I'm remembering right. Robert, if I get that wrong, I apologize up front. I'm trying to remember your email just off of memory as I'm sitting here recording the show. But it was a number of calendar apps that he sort of worked through. So I'm going to ask you in the community, do you know of anything like this? In the meantime, though, Robert did find sort of a workaround that I thought I would share with you just in case you're in the same boat as Robert and really wish that, you know, that complication wasn't so complicated, that it was a little bit more simple in terms of not showing information when you don't have any to display. So what he ended up doing was setting up a new calendar with a daily recurring fallback all-day event that just had a blank space in it. So it's basically an event with no information, no title. It's just blank. And then he set up Fantastical to show all-day events for this special calendar. So he includes a special calendar, tells it to show all-day events, and then it basically fakes out the complications. So it'll say at the top just the word today, but then it won't display anything in the area because it's actually displaying just the blank event. So I thought that was pretty clever. It's kind of a nice workaround, but obviously, you know, it fills up your calendar with this kind of fakey event, this basically fake event every day. So less than ideal, of course. So Robert still is really looking for a solution, and I think the solution would be some sort of third-party app that their complication just doesn't display anything when you don't have any events going on. So if anybody in the community knows about an app like that, please email me at maccast@gmail.com, and we'll share that on a future episode of the Maccast so we can share it with the community, and also I can get that information off to Robert, and I thank you in advance for that. Let's talk a little bit more about 5G and the new iPhone 12. I know we talked about this on the last episode of the Maccast. I sort of made the case that, you know, 5G is not quite ready for prime time. It's not quite ready, you know, for the masses. It's good if you can get it, but it's not available everywhere. So I was doing it in the guise of saying, hey, you know, you don't have to upgrade to the iPhone 12 for 5G day one right now. It's going to get better. 5G's coming, right? If you have to wait a year, you're not missing out on a ton of stuff. If you absolutely need it and you want it now and you can get it in your area, go for it. I'm not saying don't do it, but, you know, trying to be a little bit realistic about 5G and get through some of the marketing hype that, you know, Apple and the phone companies want you to believe exists around 5G. And I think a good example of this actually is that if you have a new iPhone 12 or 12 Pro model with 5G, it turns out that when you look up in the upper right-hand corner of your iPhone to look at your wireless signal, you could see one of many different types of 5G icons. And in fact, Apple has a whole support article that kind of goes through this, you know, the meaning of the different status icons that are on your iPhone. And it includes a section all about the wireless icons, everything from 4G, 3G, all the way down to Edge, right? That's what we had way, way back in the day in the original iPhone. And then up and through all the different 5G icons. So you can check out the support article. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But it can be confusing, and even to the fact where AT&T on older devices, it shows at least one of these 5G icons, and that's very baffling to folks. Going all the way back to an iPhone 8, you might see the AT&T fake G icon is what I'm going to be calling it. It's because it's purely a marketing thing, and you probably already know what I'm talking about. It's the 5G E icon. So if you see that up in your upper right-hand corner of your iPhone, it's not really 5G. Don't let them fool you. I think there's actually a lawsuit going against AT&T because they're not really being, you know, honest about the 5G. It's their LTE evolution technology. It's not true 5G. It's faster than LTE, you know, the standard LTE, which is why they call it 5G E. But yeah, that's the icon you might see up there if you're getting that connection speed. Now, if you have a new iPhone 12, 12 Pro, 12 Pro Max, or a 12 Mini, that is Apple's actual first device with a true 5G modem in it, and you have a carrier that is supporting 5G, then most likely when you're getting a 5G signal, the icon that you're going to see is simply a 5G icon. Makes sense. It's the most common one. When you see that, that's the connectivity using the sub-6 gigahertz band, the orthogonal frequency division multiplexing OFDM technology. It's what Verizon calls their nationwide 5G technology. It's going to be the most widely, at least in the US, rolled out 5G technology. I think actually also globally, because as a matter of fact, I'm not even sure that Apple's devices are supporting the other faster technology, the 5mm wave technology outside the US. And that's mainly because it's not being rolled out very widely, at least as far as I know. I'm no 5G expert. If I'm getting this totally wrong and you know better because maybe you work in the industry, email me and let me know. But from everything that I've read, that's sort of what's going on here. So most of the time, if you're getting 5G, you're going to see the simple 5G icon. When you see that, you know that you're connecting at that sub-6 gigahertz frequency. Then the next 5G icon that you might see is the faster millimeter wave technology, and you will see a 5G plus icon. That's the fastest possible 5G connectivity that is out and available right now. Again, mostly in the US, and if you're on AT&T right now, that means it's limited to about 36 cities in the US. So you're not likely going to see the 5G plus icon unless you're in very specific areas. I've even heard, like we talked about on previous episodes of the MacCast, that the 5G millimeter wave technology, it's highly susceptible to being blocked by, you know, trees, doors, buildings, all these sorts of things. So it's very directional. It's very localized. And the rollout is going to be very, very slow and limited. So if you can get that, it's great, but don't expect to see it too often. And then, of course, just to make things even more complicated, there is one more 5G icon that you might see, but only if you're on a Verizon iPhone. And that's because Verizon has chose to brand the millimeter wave technology with their own nomenclature. So they call it 5G ultra wideband. So in their case, you won't see a 5G plus icon when you're on millimeter wave. What you will see is a 5G UW icon. But it's exactly the same as the 5G plus. Same technology, same band, nothing different, just a different icon because, you know, marketing, whatever. So those are all the different 5G icons that you might see on your device. And I wanted to run through those because it's just kind of crazy, right? Like, can we just all get together and agree to have like the same? No, we can't, right? It's the mobile carriers. They're just, they can't get along. I don't know. Anyway, all right. That's 5G. And if you have any comments and questions on that, of course, be sure to email me, maccast@gmail.com. All right, you ready to help out a member of the MacCast community with his photo library? Yeah, of course you are. We're going to try and help him out. But I received this voicemail from Ryan this week, and here's what he's trying to do with his photos.
Hey, Adam, this is Ryan. I'm looking for some advice from you and your listeners on a photos project I'm about to undertake. I've recently been getting the warnings that my iCloud storage is getting close to full and that I should upgrade. I pay for the 200 gigabyte plan, and instead of making the leap to the 2 terabyte tier, I thought I'd try my hand at trying to clear out all the junk photos in my library. As I look at my storage, I see that photos and videos are taking up just over 180 gigabytes. That's 25,000 photos and 2,500 videos. I'm certain that my library is filled with all kinds of shots that could be deleted. There's so many photos that aren't memories to keep, but simply a picture that I needed right in that moment to send to someone or perhaps for work. I guess I'm curious to hear how others have tackled combing through their photo libraries to rid them of unneeded photos. Are there better methods or tools other than literally scrolling through picture by picture? Anyway, thanks so much for your hard work on the podcast. I really enjoy it.
Hey Ryan, thank you for sending in this question because I think you are not alone. I think there's a lot of us, myself included, that have very unwieldy, large photo libraries that are probably cluttered with a lot of images, like you said, that, maybe aren't ones that we really want to keep. They're probably not those quality images. And I don't think a lot of us take the time to sort of cull through that stuff and really look for those, blurry shots or not so great shots. And you would hope at some point that Apple uses maybe some of their AI technology to help us identify and clean those out. I'm actually surprised we don't kind of have that technology yet because that would be amazing. I actually, when I got your email, even did some searching to figure out if maybe a third party had this kind of app, sort of this, photo quality rating app or something like that, a plugin or some sort of app to go through your photo library. I did not find anything. And of course, that means that, this can be definitely not an easy task to tackle. And if you have a massive library, it could probably feel very daunting. And I think I'm hearing a little bit of that in your voice, which is, I'm assuming, why you've turned to the Maccast community. So we'll try to help you out. I don't know how much help I can be. Hopefully somebody has the secret sauce, the secret pill, the solution to this problem. But there are a few tools and ideas that I had immediately that I will share. The first thing is that there are a couple of apps that really go through and try and help with duplicate photos. Believe it or not, I think over the years, especially if you've been upgrading your photo library and moving it from iPhoto and all this stuff, I think there is this situation where duplicate photos can kind of creep in and sort of bloat your library. And so there are a couple great tools that you can get to kind of help identify where those duplicates are and make sure that they truly are duplicates and not just similar images. Power Photos from Fat Cat Software, and I'll have links to these in the show notes at maccast.com, is a great tool. Or Gemini 2 from MacPaw. They also have an iOS app called Gemini Photos that will help you go through and sort of cull your library. I think Gemini Photos for iOS even goes beyond just duplicates, but really does try to help you identify photos within your library that are good quality photos, or helps you just compare photos and make sure that you're keeping just the shots that you want and you're able to clean up and get rid of any shots that you don't. So those are a couple tools you might try out, at least for deduplicating your library. I also know that you can use Power Photos to split up your library. And this is a tip that I've talked about in the past. It may be that you want to just keep all your photos in a library, but maybe the one that you sync to iCloud, the main library, maybe you just want that to be kind of your newest, latest photos, and you kind of want to take other photos, maybe some of the older ones, and somewhat shoebox them. Back in the day, we would just put photos into shoeboxes and then put them on a shelf, and you kind of had your newer ones out and available and maybe in albums, but a lot of photos just got archived away. So if you want to kind of take that approach, Power Photos does let you split up your library into multiple libraries, and then you could just have your main library with the photos that you really care about, and then archive off to other libraries some of the other photos, and then you can just switch between them as you want. You could take some of those libraries and even move them onto external hard drives or other sources. Of course, make sure you back up all your photos before you do any of this, and make sure you have good solid backups. And you're going to want to back up your multiple libraries if you do have, if you do end up using something like Power Photos to make multiple libraries. But that would be one way to go too. Still somewhat of a manual process, but I started to think of some things that might be able to help you identify photos to get rid of manually, so you don't have to go through your entire library all at once. And started to think of things like maybe some of the default albums that Apple provides to you. So things like the screenshots album, you know, how many screenshots do you take over the years? You mentioned maybe doing some things for work. You could probably just go into the screenshots album and find a lot of images that you don't need anymore. I know I do that quite frequently. Another thing that's a little bit harder to identify or find are just the social media images, right? I snap a bunch of photos for social media, or I import photos to use on social media, GIFs and all that fun stuff that you like to use, and it just clutters up your library. So finding that sort of stuff, you might be able to do something like use the Smart Albums feature. So doing a search for image dimensions, right? Quality photos that you've taken with your iPhone are going to have much larger image dimensions than, say, images you might have pulled off the internet or sucked into your library through other sources. So you could search by, you know, image dimensions. You could search by image type. So maybe you just want to find all the GIF images, you know, animated GIF images. I think there's also an animated library that Apple has by default, so you could look in there, but you could create your own smart album to identify those things. And another great tip is maybe use the smart albums feature to filter down by the ISO, the camera ISO, and you could do that if you find sort of high ISO images. There's good odds that those are low light images, and a lot of times low light images tend to be not of great quality, right? Even with the more modern phones that do a little bit better job, or a much better job, in low light situations, you know, those situations where the camera was in your pocket and it accidentally went off, or, you know, we all have those sort of flubbed photos, and a lot of those sometimes can be those low light photos. So there could be a lot of tips and tricks in there. I'm not a super camera expert, so there probably are photographers in our community that would have some great ideas on how to use smart albums and some of the metadata to actually filter down and maybe help identify some of the poor shots that might be in your library. So I think there are probably, even if we don't find an app that can kind of do it automatically or do these comparisons for you, there probably are some great ways to use smart albums and some of the other built-in technologies in the Photos app to actually help identify these. So I think this is a great question. Again, I think it's something that a lot of us suffer from, photo clutter, and how do we clean it up? So I'm looking forward to hearing the responses from you in the community, because I know you have great ideas. So please send those in. Audio comments are greatly appreciated. Try to keep them brief, maybe about 3 minutes or less. And of course, emails, if you need to do that, are totally fine. Maccast@gmail.com is the email address to send emails and audio comments. And thank you, Ryan, for your question. I think this is going to help a lot of folks in our community. Next up, I have an email from James, and he had kind of a health app question or issue, not so much an issue, just something that he noticed. He's one of our UK listeners, and he'd been using the health app to help track his weight loss, something that a lot of us do. And what you may or may not know, especially if you're here in the States, is that in the UK, a common measurement for weight is stones. So they use pounds, they use stones. Stones is very commonly used, and James was saying, hey, one stone, and I didn't know this till he sent me his email, one stone equals about 14 pounds, or is 14 pounds. And so that's how you kind of do the equation. So it's basically a base 14 number, I guess. And James was saying to me in this email that his scale reports his weight measurements in stones and pounds. So, you know, you would have a certain number of stones, and then the fractional portion, or the remaining portion, is actually just in pounds, you know, out of 1 out of 14 pounds, right? 1/14. So he was taking that number and then just simply entering that into the health app, you know. So if he weighed, you know, 15 stone, 13 pounds, he was putting in 15, 13. And he did not notice at the time that the health app was only really handling one unit. So when he thought he was entering the value 13 or 15 stone, 13 pounds, The app was actually recording it as 15.13 stones. And if you do the math on that, that's basically 15 stones, 2 pounds. So it's about 11 pounds, almost 12 pounds off in terms of the actual weight. So needless to say, James noticed the issue within the app when it reported a weight loss for the first week of about 14 pounds. So he was doing very, very well. But as you might imagine, losing 14 pounds in a week for anyone is probably not very healthy at all. So he discovered this kind of weird issue, especially with the UK weight and, you know, pound or stones being a common sort of measurement, and was curious, you know, why isn't it letting him enter the weight the way he would expect, you know, in stones and pounds. And so he contacted Apple support, and he told me in his email that Apple support told him it was an error, wasn't really sure when they were going to have a fix and whatnot. But when I received the email, I kind of felt like, yeah, I don't know that that really is an error or a bug, because, you know, my weight app here in the US is also just in a single unit, right? It is in pounds. And, you know, I get that we don't use something like stones and pounds over there, but, you know, it could just as easily be, I could be saying the same thing about pounds and ounces, right? The health app is really just designed to record weight in a single unit. If my US scale reported my weight in pounds and ounces, I would still only get to enter the value in the health app in pounds. So 180 pounds, 8 ounces would still be 180.5 pounds. I would enter 180.5, not 180 pounds, 8 ounces. There aren't two input boxes for it. So the question here really is, I guess, a little bit twofold. Well, there's a question and there's kind of an answer that I came up with. But the question is, and I think what James wanted to know is there an app, a third-party app or something that would let you in the UK enter your weights in that format, in the stones pounds format, to easily get it into the health app? I went and did a little bit of searching and I didn't find anything immediately, although I'm not in the UK app store, so maybe there's more potential over there, and maybe one of our UK listeners can weigh in on that. But I was thinking about this when I received James's email, and I thought, I can't find an app, but I wonder if I could make an app. And you might think, well, you know, you're gonna have to go learn Swift and, you know, get out Xcode and do all that stuff. That's a pretty daunting task, and you know, that would definitely be a way to go, but there is another thing on iOS that basically lets us make apps, or at least little simple mini apps, and that is Shortcuts. And I know we've talked about this on the show in the past. I'm not a big Shortcuts user. I haven't built a bunch of Shortcuts, but I thought, this seems pretty simple. I think this would be a great exercise for me to get a little bit deeper into Shortcuts and see if I can actually build a tool that might help James. So I quickly went in and I wrote a shortcut called Stones as Decimal, and I will have a link to this in the show notes at maccast.com if you want to check it out, because I think it is a great way to learn. You can grab this shortcut, you can download it to your Shortcuts app, and you can break it down. You can see how I built it. It's a simple little recipe. You will, in order to use it, need to open it up and give it permissions to interact with the health app, but basically how it works is, it will prompt you to enter your weight. So when you launch the shortcut, it prompts you to enter your weight in stones first. So it says, you know, how many stones do you weigh? And then how many pounds? And then it takes the pounds, it converts it into a decimal value, a stones decimal value, basically, adds that value to your stones value, and then records that weight in the health app. So very, very simple. Does some very simple things, and it allows you to record the weight in that stones pounds measurement. So sent this off to James. He said it worked like a charm, and I was happy to hear that. And it was a great reminder on how powerful and amazing the Shortcuts app can be. So like if you have an app or if you have a use case on iOS and you're struggling to find an app or something to solve that solution, you might think, hey, can this be done maybe with a shortcut? And it is truly amazing how deeply Shortcuts is integrated into iOS now. So it's pretty cool. Check it out. And James, thank you for your question. And of course, if somebody does know of a native app or just an iOS app that does this, what James is looking for, shoot me an email, mattcast@gmail.com, and I'll make sure that information gets passed along. Again, the community, that's why we're here at the MattCast. We have a great community that helps each other out, and I definitely look forward to getting your emails because I'm sure this problem has been solved somewhere and somebody knows about it. So let us know. I want to finish out the show today talking a little bit about Apple's new bundled plans for services, their Apple One plans. And, you know, ironically, it's not just one Apple One plan. There are actually three different tiers. And I had a great question from Kirit this week who emailed in and was really curious. He was saying, you know, I have a couple different services with Apple. I received the email, the offer about Apple One. I was looking at the various plans and options, and I'm just a little bit confused. You know, I subscribe to certain services. There's certain services that I'm not really interested in, but hey, I want to make sure that I am getting the best deal, and this is a little bit confusing to me. So he currently subscribes to Apple TV Plus, Apple Music, the personal version, not the family version, and the 2 terabyte, I have in my show notes gigabyte, the 2 terabyte iCloud plan. And he says, you know, I'm not really interested in any of the other services, you know, Apple News or Apple Arcade or Fitness. They don't really do much for me. So I know I think I'm okay with my current a la carte plans, but I'm looking at this new plan and I'm curious if I can get some savings in here. Is there a way for me to kind of get a better deal? And right now, with what Kirit is paying, if you price everything up separately, which is how he's paying for it, the Apple TV Plus at $4.99, right, and Apple Music at $9.99, and the 2 terabyte iCloud storage at $9.99, you end up with, and these are all the U.S. numbers, of course, you know, different depending upon what region you're in, but for US, it would come out to $24.97 per month. So just under 25 bucks a month. And if you look at Apple's top tier Apple One plan, what they call the Premier plan that comes with everything. So that would be 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, Apple News, Games, and Fitness. You know, three services that James is not interested in. That plan comes in at $30 a month. And you might be thinking, well, $5 a month to get, you know, three more services, that's a great deal. But if you're not interested in using those services, then there's no point in really paying for them, right? So he's not interested. So at that level, you know, I might say to Kirit, well, you're better off just sticking with your a la carte because you're going to pay $5 less a month, $60 less a year. You're not going to have the services that you don't want, and away you go. And that would seem right, except for one thing. Apple does offer a plan that mostly has just the services that Kirit's into. So it's called the individual plan, and it's actually Apple's cheapest tiered plan, and it comes with Apple Music, comes with Apple TV Plus, comes with Apple Arcade, which Kirit is not really interested in, and comes with 50 gigabytes of iCloud storage, and that's $14.95 a month US. Now, you might be thinking, you know, $14.95, he's going to save about 10 bucks a month over what he is currently paying. That's great, but you probably have also already noticed that he's losing a lot of storage. He's going from 2 terabytes of storage down to just 50 gigabytes, and that's probably not enough storage for him. But here's the thing about Apple One plans that hasn't been, I don't think, very well publicized, or at least very well advertised, at least not by Apple, is you can always add more storage into your Apple One plan, no matter what you're on. At the regular rate or the regular monthly price, Apple would ask for iCloud storage. So if you add back in the 2 terabytes of iCloud storage for $9.99 a month, what you end up with is a plan that costs $24.94 a month, or about 3 cents a month cheaper than what Kirit is currently paying. Of course, he gains Apple Arcade, which he's not really interested in, but basically getting that for free, and the 2 terabytes of storage is actually additive to his Apple One plan, which already has 50 gigabytes. So he's getting an additional 50 gigabytes of storage along with Apple Arcade and still paying less, just slightly, 3 cents a month, than his current a la carte plan. So it ends up being a better deal to go Apple One and then just add on the additional storage. Just a little bit, but hey, if you're going to get some things for free, a little bit extra storage, and you're going to pay a little bit less money, hey, that's not too bad a deal. So you can make Apple One work depending upon what you're looking for. You do have to dig a little bit. I wish it was like clear. I wish it was a little bit more simplified than Apple has it. But I think in general, most people, as I've been looking at this, depending upon your situation, it's going to vary. But I think most people are going to benefit and at least save a little, or maybe at least pay the same amount and get some additional services by moving to some of these Apple One plans. So you'll have to play around with it. Your results will likely vary. But I think you can work out and get a good deal. And just another thing on that storage being additive, what's pretty cool is that also means now if you need more than 2 terabytes, you can actually get more than 2 terabytes of storage because you can get on the Premier plan with the 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, and then you can add any one of the additional storage plans. So you can even go all the way up to 4 terabytes of storage if you want to pay another $10. So if you want to go from $30 to $40 a month, you can get Apple One Premium with 4 terabytes of storage, which is pretty darn cool. That's a nice amount of cloud storage. I'm on the 2 terabyte plan, and I don't think I need any more at the moment. But if I ever needed it, it's nice to know that I could. So I did end up switching and signing up for the Apple One Premier plan because I already had an Apple Music Family plan, which is $15 a month. I had Apple Arcade at $5 a month. I had Apple TV at $5 a month. And I had 2 terabytes of iCloud storage at $10 a month. So I was paying about $35 a month doing the a la carte version of the plan. And of course, the Premier plan is $30 a month. So I end up saving $5 a month, $60 a year. And then I gain 2 additional services. I get Apple News and I get Apple Fitness. Now, will I use those? I don't know. I'm starting to use Apple News more because I did a 2-month free trial through Best Buy. And I was really, really enjoying it. I was starting to use it more. So I kind of knocked Apple News early on. But, you know, having access to it is really nice. And just the option to use it, I think, is great, especially if I'm saving money. So why wouldn't I go for that? So I'm kind of excited about the bundled plans, the Apple One plans. I do think in general, in a lot of cases, not every case, but I think in a lot of cases, they are a pretty good deal. So if you haven't considered looking into them, take a look, you know, do the math for yourself, figure out if you can get some savings or some additional services. And Kirit, I hope this additional information helps you out and helps you make a decision about whether you want to go Apple One or you want to stick a la carte. I think you're good either way, but you're right on the cusp. But why not get Apple Arcade and some additional storage and pay the same, basically the same amount you're already paying? I think it's a pretty good deal. But with that, that is going to do it for the MacCast for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for Mac and iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You will find them at BackbeatMedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find me on Instagram, just the MacCast, or just MacCast, rather, on Instagram. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.